Hi, I'm Scott.
And I'm Jason. Welcome to Skipped On Shuffle, a podcast where we delve into an overlooked song by a popular artist.
Today we are talking about Fiona Apple and her song Werewolf.
I could liken you to a werewolf the way you left me for dead, but I admit that I provided a full moon.
Welcome to Skipped On Shuffle. Today we are talking about the terrific, terrific track Werewolf by Fiona Apple, who is a singer-songwriter, piano player, and it's off her latest record, The Idler Wheel. And very excited about this one. One of my favorite tracks of hers. Very unfortunately, number 42 on her iTunes charts, meaning that there are 41 other songs by Fiona Apple that people like more than this one.
For someone who's probably released 50, 60 songs that would be on there during her career, it is surprising that it's so low. A couple of just reasons for that might be it's off the new album. Most new albums tend to be a little bit more unpopular, especially, you know, if you've had a career as long as she has, which she's been around for, you know, 20 plus years at this point, hit her peak right at the beginning of her career with her debut album. You know, you tend to kind of drop off in popularity after that point, really retaining, you know, that hardcore audience that really loves you and is rabid for new music.
Yeah.
So that might be part of the reason why this song is so low.
It's a crime, though. I mean, in a way, this song is the essence of what we're trying to do with this podcast, whereas this is one of her greatest songs as far as I'm concerned. And I'm, you know, a longtime fan. I have all of her records. I've been listening to her for my whole adult life, essentially. And I can say without any hyperbole that this is one of her best songs. So it's really a crime that is so low on that list.
Yeah, and I mean, we're both big fans, and I think one of the reasons that we're such big fans of Fiona Apple is that we're drawn to her honesty in her songwriting, and the song holds up as one of the great examples of that. And really, Fiona Apple is interesting in that she's one of those artists that the only way we really learn anything about her or know anything about her is primarily from her music, the albums she puts out, the songs she puts out. She does interviews
sporadically
here and there.
But yeah, she's not on social media.
Not on social media.
She's not Instagramming every day. Like she's reclusive in a way for today.
Yeah.
She's very reclusive.
Certainly by today's standards. Yeah. So really the only way we feel a connection with her at all is certainly through her music.
Yeah. And this is a song that is straight from the heart, straight from a, without a doubt, real experience. This is not something that she made up one day in her bedroom and was like, you know, I'm going to write a song about this made up thing. This is something she experienced, and she's documenting it in musical form.
Yeah. One thing you'll certainly find throughout her music is she's always speaking in the first person. She doesn't invent characters. It's always in her own voice about her own experiences, which contrasts with a lot of other musicians where they'll, you know, speak in the third person or create these particular type. They might be singing in the first person,
but it's not real. It's made up.
Yeah,
they didn't even write the song.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's what labels are going for nowadays. They want a message. They want some sort of universal thing that, you know, a person in Minnesota could identify with, but a person in New York could also identify with. And Fiona kind of bucks that whole thing. She's an old school songwriter who's just like, nope, I know I'm going to write what I know, and this is what I know. And if you relate to it, great. If you don't, sorry.
But you were such a super guy till the second you get away from me. We're like a wishing well and a bolt of electricity, but we could still.
So let's talk about the history of Fiona from the beginning. So her first album comes out in 1996. It's called Tidal. That's not the name of the record, not Tidal like as in title, but Tidal as in Tidal Wave. And it goes on to sell 3 million copies, basically on the back of one hit song, which is called Criminal. And how old was she when she...
She was 17.
17 years old. So she's 17 years old when she writes and releases this record, which is incredible. I mean...
And the sole songwriter on all the songs.
Yeah, it's not like she
album.
Was... It wasn't like a Kesha situation where she had like a team of songwriters and they said, here, sing these songs. It was her writing these songs on a piano, bringing them into a recording studio and then singing and playing them. which is incredible. And the song was huge based on this one song, Criminal, which was helped by this video, which was semi-controversial when it came out. If you haven't seen the video, it's Fiona, 17, 18 years old, writhing around, partially clothed in this very colorful, weird room that looks like it was decorated in the 60s. It was very sexual imagery, and in the song itself has some sexual imagery too as well. So she kind of catapulted into fame as this like seductive, sultry, sexy little girl kind of thing, which ultimately she did not want. She hated. She actively told people that was not what she was going for.
Yeah, and I think we get the best sense of that from her own words when the following year in 1997. At the MTV Video Music Awards, she won for Best New Artist for that video, and she spoke out entirely against basically her own image and that kind of manufacturing that goes on
behind the scenes.
Yeah, at the record industry and in entertainment in general, that you're being sold a manufactured image, and she basically spoke out against what the product that she was being sold as, in an effort to more clearly define herself and also set a really positive example for, her fans, a lot of whom were, young women, seeing this video and hearing her music.
Everybody out there that's watching, everybody that's watching this world is bull. And you shouldn't model your life. Wait a second. You shouldn't model your life about what you think that we think is cool and what we're wearing and what we're saying and everything. Go with yourself. Go with yourself.
So we can say this now, looking back. Yeah. But at the time, this was not the case. At the time, she was torn apart in the media. I mean, like eviscerated by everybody, saying that, she's a spoiled little rich girl. She just won Best New Artist at MTV Movie Award or Music Awards, and she's got her award in her hand, and she's basically saying this is bullshit. Yeah. And at the time, it was not looked upon well at all.
No, it's funny to think of how well this has aged, where if you imagine this, happening now, 20 years later, that people would probably be like, wow, she made a really profound, positive statement, not only for musical artists in general, but also as a female role model in the entertainment industry. So it's really interesting to think about the change that has happened
over the past 20 years.
Yeah. Over the past 20 years.
Yeah. That a young woman could get on stage and basically say, everything that you think I stand for is not good and you should avoid it, while holding the award in her hand, and have that not be seen as an amazing, amazing thing, And instead, back then, I mean, I can't remember some of the headlines, but they were really bad. They were
No one was like, oh, she did this great thing.
Yeah,
like,
this.
It was more to the tune of like, what's wrong with this person?
Exactly.
Like there's something going on here.
Something's going on. So since she goes into the studio and she works on her second record, which is called When the Pawn, and has a very much longer
and
title.
And then 90 more words after that.
This is a very long title. At the time, the Guinness World Record holder of the longest album title, which was eventually surpassed by somebody else, but a very long album title, shortened down to When the Pawn. She goes in the studio, she makes the second record, and directly references this incident on a few of the songs, and in general on the record is mostly her being like, yeah, you know what? I made a statement. I did some stuff. What do you want? I'm a teenager. I'm a teenage girl and I'm more mature than my age. And I felt like I was being exploited. And I said what was on my mind, and that's who I am. And if you don't like it, then I don't care. And that's kind of what her second record was all about. And it was also successful, but not nearly as successful as Title.
Yeah. And in following up on a lot of that message, there's the song A Mistake, where, she talks about like, I made a mistake. So what? It's who I am. I'm going to move forward. It's a very unapologetic
record.
I think if you were going to describe it in any way, the first record has a lot of discussion of relationships.
Yeah.
Certainly that carries over into this record and throughout her entire career. Yeah. But probably the second record, more than anything else, you feel like she's commenting on her fame and this persona that's been, essentially manufactured around her.
Yeah.
And she's constantly kind of struggling against.
I'm gonna make a mistake. I'm gonna do it on purpose. I'm gonna waste my time.
So she has this huge monumental, media moment. She releases a second record that does fairly well, but still kind of underperforms compared to the first record. And then poof, she's gone. She just vanishes. Yeah. She's no one hears from her again.
She does a tour, supports the album, but by 2000, 2001, suddenly she's completely off the radar until essentially the album drops in 2005.
Yeah.
Which isn't entirely true because her fans forced her back in the spotlight to some degree. So originally when she was recording the follow-up to When the Pawn, which was, came out in 1999. So here she is like early 2000s, trying to make this album. She had worked with the producer she had worked with
for the first two
records. For When the Pawn.
Yeah.
John Bryan. You might know his name from other working with other artists or soundtracks. He's a pretty well-known producer.
Yep.
So they had worked on the second album together. She worked with him on this third album, but wasn't really happy with the sound of the album or where the songs were at that point, and decided to just basically drop everything where she was at, take another break, and then, had planned to come back and look at the songs again. Yeah. And she ended up finding another producer for that album and then eventually releasing the song in 2005. But in that time span, the fans had gotten wind of at least some of the behind the scenes of her
they heard that the record was being held back, and they had no idea whether, because Fiona is so reclusive, they had no idea whether it was Fiona saying, "I don't want my record released," or if it was the label being like, "Your record is not good enough, we're not going to."
But they blame the record company.
So they start blaming the record company.
So you had this whole, they had this whole campaign, which was Free Fiona, feeling as though she was being held back by a record company. And I mean, there's a lot of precedents for this when you look at the careers of people like Prince or George Michael, people who felt like the record company was purposely holding them back or sabotaging their career,
right?
Certainly stifling their artistic ability. So the fans felt like this was what was happening with Fiona, not realizing that it was of her own volition that, oh, I'm going to wait and let these songs gestate a while longer, maybe switch producers. So they started this Free Fiona campaign. They started mailing apples into
Sony Records,
the Sony Records.
And there was hundreds, maybe thousands of these apples show up on the same day to Sony Records to send a message being like, Free Fiona, we want to hear her new record. And Fiona wakes up one day and reads about this and is like, guys,
what? Everyone relax. So she ends up releasing a statement to her fans, kind of explaining a little bit about what's going on and basically being like, it's not you, it's me. kind of explanation. But I mean, it ended up jumpstarting her to getting back into working on this album.
Yeah, it ended up being like the best publicity that she could have ever gotten.
Yeah,
and it was totally by the fans and not one of those manufactured publicity stunts that we hear about so many times.
It's funny to look back on it because it's like you couldn't hope for any better promotional material to be.
It was everywhere. Everybody's like, thousands of apples show up to Sony Records and everybody's like, what is going on here?
So she finds a new producer, finishes the album. That album comes out. She garners another Grammy nomination.
Yep.
It is a popular, successful album. Has a couple singles from it. And then in the kind of what's become the classic Fiona fashion,
just
suddenly disappears,
goes away again.
Yep. And so she came out with that album in 2005, toured to support it afterwards. So by probably 2007, suddenly she's completely
off the
radar again.
Yep.
And we don't hear from her until we hear rumors and rumblings about a new album, and finally she comes out with the Idler Wheel in 2012. So a significant gap between albums. So you're talking 7 years.
We're talking a career. We're talking a career of over 20 years and only 4 records. So we're at an average of a record every 5 years.
Yeah,
which is an eternity in popular music.
Yep, and it's interesting in this album coming out because it's very different from the previous three. It sounds almost in some ways underproduced. It's a little more raw. There was only one hit from it.
It'd be a stretch. There was one single.
Basically, the record company said, okay, we'll do one. So it's interesting to think about that aspect. And it's a very personal album. It's a lot of the songs are about her current relationships. And not that that's new in any kind of way, but she was a little bit more upfront about it. I mean, there's one song called Jonathan.
Yeah, which is...
That is about Jonathan Ames, who, you know, dated her for a period of time. And she felt comfortable...
Doesn't get much more direct than that.
Yeah, she felt comfortable, you know, attaching his name to that song and describing, you know, their relationship.
Jonathan, anything and anyone you've done has got to be all right with me. She's part of the reason you are how you are. She's all right with me. Just tolerate my little fist stuck in on your forest. I don't want to talk about.
Okay, so we're looking at Werewolf off of the Idler Wheel. As we mentioned, this album came out in 2012. 10 tracks. Only one of those was a single, which is interesting because it's a lot less than previous Fiona albums.
And but usually for most records, it's like what, two or three.
Yeah, yeah. Depending on, you know, usually you might release one in advance of the record to get people
hyped
pumped up, interested. Yeah. And then usually you at least find another song or two that you earmark for release later on.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that because there's been such a long gulf of time between Fiona albums, you would think that naturally people would be really itching to hear more from this album on the radio or, you know, through streaming services, wherever, you know, you might be listening to music.
Yeah. But I mean, this record is just pretty weird. It's a pretty weird record.
It's very different. It's a very stripped down record compared to her previous productions. It's really piano drum based, a lot of interesting, weird percussion, thrown into a lot of these tracks. So I'm not sure if that was part of something that made it hard for the record labels to market, where, you know, sometimes the only instruments you're hearing are piano and drums. You know, where do you hear that now? So I think that might be part of the reason. The other reason for not hearing a lot from this record, and this is kind of an interesting thing, and taken from Fiona's personal opinion, she ended up recording a song called Dull Tool for the film This Is 40. It ended up coming out on that film soundtrack, which was put out by two other record labels that were not her own
Sony record label.
Yeah. So Fiona has the belief that the record company basically stopped promoting or refused to promote the album further because she had done this other thing that creates a conflict against the wishes of, which
goes to show that, like, these, you know, you hear all the time from musicians, like, oh, the record labels and the record labels this and the record labels that. But it does come down to sometimes just being, like, vindictive, being like, you know, you did something we didn't want you to do, so guess what? We're not going to promote your record, you know, and which is childish and ridiculous, but that's what it really is.
Yeah. it's business. It is a business.
Yeah,
when you come down to it.
Yeah.
So back to Werewolf. Okay, so Werewolf is on this album. Very personal song, piano based. We get almost no other instrumentation.
I think the liner notes say that there is a bass, probably I'm guessing a stand up bass in the background, very, very low in the mix. And then there's some other various instrumentation, but it's probably just more for like atmosphere than anything else. But basically, this is a piano vocal song, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's interesting for Fiona because it is only really one song prior to this that I can think of, which is Parting Gift off of Extraordinary Machine. And again, you get a very personal song about a fight, basically.
Yeah, a fight between her and one of her relationships, boyfriend.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to discern who she's talking about in some of the songs. Sometimes she's upfront about it. Other times,
yeah.
And people can kind of infer like, oh, it must
right.
Have been
well, with
this
with for example, with When the Pawn, when that album came out, she was predominantly in a relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yep.
So it was pretty clear that most of the songs from that record were about him, and even some of the lyrics did like refer to the male, the relationship that she's referring to, being a show business person.
Mm, yeah.
So it made perfect sense. Like, okay, clearly this song is about Paul Thomas Anderson, which is interesting in itself. If you're a film fan and you're watching Paul Thomas Anderson movies and you're like, wow, here's this, famous singer songwriter writing these songs about him and whatever. So yeah, I mean, clearly very personal song about a very personal relationship. And she just lays it all out.
Yep. And that's what we get here. So this song starts out rather interesting, and it almost sounds like she's throwing in a tape into a recorder and hitting record and then starting to play the song.
Right.
So it's interesting that we have that little effect at the beginning. And then I feel like for her, a very sparse, simple piano.
We were talking about how she's a very percussive pianist. She really likes to hit the keys, and she likes to sort of make a beat with her left hand as she's pounding out the bass chord. She likes to make that beat. But with this song, it's much more kind of plinky and, not her usual style of playing.
Yeah. And when you start to look at the lyrics and think about other songs on this album, it's almost oddly, I don't want to say childish because that kind of demeans the sophistication of the song.
Yeah.
But it's almost like a lullaby.
Yeah, I can get that. That like plinky little like twinkle twinkle little star kind of thing.
Yeah, it almost sounds like something played on like a music box where the notes sporadically come out.
Yeah.
And it almost seems slightly off time or that certain parts are played slightly faster than other parts. I don't know if that's true or that's just the kind of sense that I get from the song.
I think this sounds like a demo. It doesn't sound like this was produced in a multi-million-dollar studio with some big famous producer. It sounds like, and I think that the tape player in the beginning kind of is like her little wink at us being like, it's not a demo, but this is what a demo would sound like. It sounds like this song. And I imagine her going into the studio and the producer being like, okay, what song are we going to work on now? And she's like, I have this demo that I wrote. Here it is. She presses play. And the producer being like, we're not going to do anything to this song.
Yeah,
this is it. It's done. You've already finished the song just by writing it. There's nothing else that we need to add or take away from this.
Mm. And that's interesting to think about, where one of Fiona's personal touches to it is this kind of this on location recording of kids playing basically at a school that is apparently across from her house or somewhere near her house. So that's kind of a weird thing that comes in very later in the song. She's singing, the lyrics end up turning to, and I could liken you to a lot of things, but I always come around because in the end I'm a sensible girl. And during that sensible girl part, we hear children.
Sensible girl, I know the fiction of the fix, but you were such a super guy till the second you get away from me.
Looking into this a little bit, the background was kind of interesting. I guess she was staying with her mother in New York. Her mother has an apartment in Harlem somewhere,
and that's where she's from, right?
And she's
born and raised in New York.
And she was staying back there, wanted to go back there to write, and then ended up coming back to California to record the album. And when she was in New York, she said that she likes to hang out. She leaves on Turner Classic Movies, apparently, a lot of the time.
Fiona.
Certainly Fiona, and also makes the Paul Thomas Anderson thing more interesting.
Yeah.
Because I've read an interview and Paul Thomas Anderson says, oh, I like to leave on Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, so maybe she picked that up from him.
Yeah,
so
just a weird quirky thing. Who knows? But she apparently, it was on and she was working on the song or thinking about some part of the song. There was some scene with screaming on the TV and she really liked it.
Yeah.
And she knew she wanted to incorporate it in the song. And I guess she spent close to a year trying to figure out how to mimic that recording. She didn't want to use what was, you know, in the film.
Yeah.
I think especially because she said it was like some kind of shootout scene or something, but she wanted some kind of chaotic sort of sound and went around. She had a funny story where she said she'd, you know, I'd go up to drunk groups of people on the street and be like with the recorder and being like, scream for me. And she said it, you know, it always felt forced and fake.
Yeah.
And eventually she said, you know, she was sitting back at home in California and heard these kids outside and said, that's what I want to put on here.
Which is, it's just funny because I'm a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan, and a lot of Billy Corgan's demos, they have sounds in the background. You can hear police sirens go by, you can hear people walking through the room, whatever, like, because he just hits record and starts playing. And it's funny that Fiona is basically making that sound artificially. You know, in this song that's so honest and so raw and so direct, she's like sort of building it to make it sound like it's a demo, when in reality it's recorded in the studio.
Yeah, and maybe part of it is a reminder of like breaking that illusion for you is when you hear that.
Yeah.
Which again, just, you know, an interesting choice, and also her thinking about, you know, where it comes lyrically over, you know, Sensible Girl.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the screaming and childishness, you know, that you hear in the background. And she talks very openly about, you know, feeling like a child and wanting to get back to that kind of world, not in like the weird Michael Jackson Peter Pan sense, but more in a way of like, okay, like I'm an adult and I have these, I'm self-aware enough to know I have these tendencies and this is how I am. And I accept myself as that. And I need to put some kind of limits on that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, act in a different way. And that's hard. And I think that's hard when you're a very public figure that a lot of people are, you know, like, or as we discussed, her fan base is very, you know, rabid,
where,
you know, they're really eager for things. And I think she's someone who's comfortable with saying, here's my life, in sharing that with you. Maybe that helps you. Maybe it doesn't.
Right.
You know, I'm not necessarily going to be the person to spout advice to you or, you know, tell you what you should think or how you should feel about anything. I'll just tell you how I feel about what I've been through.
Yeah. And I think that you touched on like the idea of her wanting to sort of revert back to a more childlike state and an innocence and still with the self-awareness of an adult, but still like trying to tap into that childlike world. I think is kind of all over this record, and especially this song. I think that the song, the lyrics themselves, I think are very, very self-aware, but at the same time, they're still kind of playful and childish. And, you know, there's one of these lines here, the lava of the volcano shot up hot from under the sea. You know, I mean, and that may not, you know, you may not read that as being like a childish or an innocent kind of thing, but I don't know. I just kind of imagine in like volcanoes, kids love volcanoes when they're first learning about
science. You think about the little kit.
Yeah. You think about that little kit, you know, and, you know, but what she's really trying to say is that like, she knows she has issues, and she knows this relationship that she's writing about has issues, but she's okay with that. You know, she's like, you know, relationships have issues and that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think especially for her, she's like, I'm very temperamental and I'm aware of that. And I think it's interesting too, how she, for a song that's, I don't even know how to approach the song. It's partly a breakup song, but
it's like a happy breakup song.
Yeah, but like it's okay. We had a relationship. Things didn't work out.
Yeah.
That happens. Like we're different people. Some things, you know, for us gel and coalesce and we're a great couple. But at other points, we recognize maybe as a relationship goes on, oh, maybe we are too different and we're really individual people. You know, parts work, some parts don't. And I think that she really does an interesting job in the lyrics of the song of this. So you mentioned about the lava of the volcano shooting up under the sea, and then it ends up making an island of me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that relationship is important. It's formative for, you know, where she is now. And you could read that a lot of ways. Like on the one hand, you know, it sounds kind of like isolated and alone. And on the other hand, it's, you know, more empowering, where it's like, okay, I'm my own land now. Like, yeah. I know where my borders are.
Exactly.
And that's just kind of an interesting metaphor she uses throughout the song.
Well, she's a very metaphorical lyricist. And I think we should talk a little bit about why the song is called Werewolf. I mean, the whole song opens up, "I could liken you to a werewolf the way you left me for dead, but I admit that I provided a full moon." So essentially what she's saying with this entire song, I mean, she almost has like a mission statement at the beginning of the song. She's like, this is what the song is about. You were bad and you did some bad stuff and you were like an animal in certain ways. But I have to admit that I was the one who kind of pushed you into that position. Yeah. So she's taking responsibility for what she's doing, and she's writing a song about how she feels responsible, but at the same time knows that it wasn't just her and is okay with that. She's like, you know, we mashed heads, we had problems, I brought out the worst in you, you brought out the worst in me, but we realized we were self-aware enough to realize that wasn't working, and then we decided to move on. And then that's when the repeated line in the chorus comes along. Nothing wrong when a song ends in a minor key, which is her way of saying, like, it ended not so greatly, but you know what? Some songs do. And some of the most beautiful songs were written were ended in a minor key, and that doesn't make it any worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel very strongly about, and as a performer and doing a lot of cover songs, I like to play those kinds of songs where people just sort of accept the fate or are comfortable with how things turned out and wrote a song about it and wanted to share that experience. And it's interesting playing those covers because you really realize how much you potentially can affect like the mood of a room or the mood of someone.
Yeah.
So playing, you know, one or two of those songs, especially in a row, people are suddenly just like, oh, can you just play something more? I'm so like down now, especially playing in a bar or something somewhere.
People are trying to
like
get drinks.
So he's like, oh my God. But it's funny to think about. And I have to just wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. Like, yeah, there is nothing inherently wrong with something ending badly, especially when you learn something from it.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, obviously in this particular instance, it's a relationship, but it could be a job. It could be the death of a loved one. I mean, it could be anything where something quote unquote ends on a sad note, but you can't, it's naive and silly to try to sum up everything that happened up to that point as being either bad or good just because it ended badly.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what she's trying to get across with this song, is just be like, you know, things went bad, but that doesn't mean that everything was bad. And I think that, you know, in a way you're saying that people are like, oh, I really want a more uplifting song. And I'm like, this is an uplifting song. Like, yeah, it sounds like it's not, but when you really listen to it and what she's trying to get across, even, you know, the way she's playing, like you were saying, like the music box kind of like tinky kind of thing. And then the way she sings and tries to get across, I mean, this is in a way a happy song.
Like, yeah. And the delivery is interesting too, because it's one of the few, before we get into the bridge of the song, where she mentions the lava of a volcano, there's this kind of crescendo, it builds. And it's one of the few times that I think I've ever heard on a Fiona record where she breathes in.
Oh yeah.
And you hear her breathing in.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting that it mimics that like building of tension that will, you know, then explode with the volcano.
Yeah.
Just kind of an interesting anecdote in kind of the Fiona canon. That's not something that I feel like you normally, it's not like Muse where, you know,
where he's always breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's weird to hear Fiona do that when, you know, I mean, she's someone who's very expressive, but not in an amateurish way.
Yeah.
Like she, you know, sings in a very,
well, you have to remember that, like we said at the beginning of this episode, that she was 17 when she first made her first record. I mean, 17. Yeah. So, I mean, like, this woman has been,
she has a lot under her belt of, like, I know how to perform. I know
she
what,
is a pro. Like, she's been doing this since she was so young. I mean, most people, they don't get their first hit record until they're in their 20s. And she started way earlier than that. So, I mean, you know, if there's anybody who knows the ins and outs of making a great recording, it's going to be this woman. Mm.
So there's a reason it's in there and you can hear it.
Like, she didn't do it just like haphazardly. It was there on purpose, where she felt like, this was a time where she's like, I can imagine her thinking to herself, I'm, you know, I've got a lot to say here. I'm going to lay it down, you know? And, I think that that's really interesting way of doing it. I think that going back to like how long it takes her to make a record, how there was 7 years in between the previous record and this one that Werewolf appears on. I mean, it really goes to show like how much time she had to think about this. Like, this was not something that she was just like, we recorded the track and then I went to Bermuda for a few months. You know, like, she was like really thinking about like, how can I make this song even better? And I have years to figure it out. And what you're hearing as a fan is that 7 years of effort. And for a song that's this simple, the fact that we can talk about it as much as we already have is incredible, that we have a song that is only 3 minutes and 12 seconds long. And there's so much going on here. And literally, if you just listen to it for the first time, you would think it was just a woman playing piano and singing a song.
Yeah. Yep. But we can still support each other. All we gotta do is avoid each other. Love the wrong way. A song ends in the mind. Love the wrong way. All right. So we talked about Fiona's career, the album, the song. I guess I have to ask you, Scott, what does the song mean to you?
Well, Fiona's lyrics have always been amazing. I think she's one of the best lyricists of our generation, possibly of all time. I mean, she writes so personally and, so vividly, and she uses metaphor so well. She's one of the few, you know, rock lyricists that, you know, you could read her lyrics and say to yourself, like, this is actually just poetry. You know, you can't do that with, you know, a Rolling Stones song, you know, no one's going to read I Can't Get No Satisfaction and be like, this really speaks to me, you know, like, but
even in the album title, which is like a little poem.
Even in the little poem album titles that she does. So yeah, I love her lyrics and they've always affected me in profound ways, but, there's a specific song, a specific, line in this song that's really hits hard for me. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this one for this podcast, which is, but we can still support each other. All we got to do is avoid each other. And, I think not only personally for me, I think that summarizes so many different relationships that have happened in my life where it's like, you know, there's still, you know, we've broken up or things have ended. There's been the friendship has ended, whatever kind of relationship you want to refer to, something has ended. And it ended not because we hate each other, not because one of us has greatly wronged the other, but it just ended. You know, things, we moved on, we moved away or whatever the case may be. And we're still going to support each other by staying out of each other's lives and staying out of each other's way and being like, I want you to do you. I want you to be happy. And I want me to be happy. And for whatever reason, when we are together, those two things don't happen. And I think that this particular line in the middle of this song really just like when she delivers that line, it like sends it right down to the bone for me. And I also think it's really interesting to think about how it works in the context of social media, which we mentioned earlier. She's not on, she doesn't have any social media at all. And it's really interesting that like the idea of being friends, quote unquote, on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and, you know, but not actually interacting with each other. You know, you read their status updates or you read their, watch their pictures or, and if some sort of like monumental event happens, like they get married or have the baby or whatever, you might comment on it and be like, whatever. But really what you're doing is staying away from each other. Like you're in your part of the world. I'm in my part of the world. I still support you, but I'm not going to interact with you on any kind of significant level, but I'm still your friend. And I think that as, you know, as superficial as that sounds, I think that when you look at it in the context of what Fiona is saying with Werewolf, is it's actually this profound, like, last act of love and support being like, what the best way for me to help you live your life great is for me to not be a part of your life. And I think that the fact that she can get across so deep and monumental of a notion as that in, you know, what, a dozen words, like the fact that she can do that is a true testament to the power of Fiona. And I think that it's important that this song gets more credit, because I think that people around the world would feel the same way as me listening to this song, but they haven't listened to it because it's not one of her popular songs.
Yeah, and I feel like that's an interesting way to bring it back to the again, for lack of a better word, kind of the childish elements of the song, certainly in terms of just the metaphors being like something you read in some kind of, you know, fantasy story. You know, just talking about like werewolves, sharks, volcanoes, like just, yeah, you know, things that grab your attention.
Yeah.
You know, certainly as a kid.
Yeah.
And to say something so adult in that like simplistic way that even like a child could understand, like you almost get the sense that, you know, like if you explained your circumstances to someone, you know, 10 years old, they tell you, well, like, why are you still like around this person? Like, why are you still together? Like, you know, and it would dawn on you like, oh yeah, I guess that's not really helping us at all. It almost feels like that.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. It's a very advanced and adult thing to say, to be like, I love you, but this doesn't work. And it's not helping either of us get to where
exactly
we want to be, or be the people who we want to be or imagine ourselves to be. And I think that's a pretty profound thing to say. And especially as we talked about in the age of the contemporary music that we listen to, where your classic breakup songs are like, I'm great and you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah.
Or fuck you. Like, I'm done with you. You know, like it's really, this takes a far more complex view of it. And it says like, we're two people. We're both very complicated people.
Yeah.
We, you know, have our issues and our things. Sometimes we're compatible, sometimes we're not. And in the case of Werewolf, I think she's saying more often than not, it's a combustible situation. Like, it's bad. Like,
right.
You know, I cause you to react this way. You cause me to be this way. And it's not healthy.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And that's, you know, when she gets to, you know, the line, like, nothing wrong when a song ends in a minor key, it's just like some things don't work out the way you envisioned or hope them to be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, as long as
you're adult enough to acknowledge it. Yeah.
And she has another line from another song on this album. I can't remember which one it is, but she mentions like, oh, as long as we're learning, or as long as you're learning,
yeah,
you know, as long as you're, you know, trying to be the better person, that's what should count. It shouldn't count that it went wrong or it went bad. You know, those lingering feelings don't do you any good. That bitterness doesn't do you any good.
Exactly.
And I agree. Like, it's actually a hopeful song, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, you know, it turned out poorly, it was a total shit show, but, you know, I learned, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Walking out of this relationship. And I know in the future that you're going to be more conscious of that, and I'm going to be more conscious of that. And that's really the best I think you can hope for going through life.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's what growth is. I mean, you're basically just talking about growth. It's like, you know, we went through some shit. We came out of the other side, and we're more advanced than we were when we began. And regardless of what happened in that time period, that's good. You know, the fact that you're able to acknowledge that is good. And I think that the song kind of like is almost like the poster child for that kind of thought process. And this being like, this is the song that you need to listen to and examine and reflect on, because this is going to change your perspective about the you know, the quote unquote shitty things that are happening in your life. And you're like, well, maybe it is shitty, but that's not a bad thing necessarily.
Nothing wrong when a song ends in the minor key.
So thank you for joining Scott and I at Skipped on Shuffle for this episode of Fiona Apple's Werewolf from her Idler Wheel album. We both really encourage you to delve deeper into Fiona's work. And, you know, you can find her albums streaming or find them in your local record store. In addition to the Skipped on Shuffle podcast, please join us on YouTube, where we'll be performing renditions of the songs that we discuss in our episodes.
Feel free to visit us at skippedonshuffle.com, where you can read our blog, where we talk about more stuff about Fiona, as well as the other artists that we're going to be covering in the future episodes. And you can also follow us on various social media platforms. All the links are at skippedonshuffle.com.